And away we go. It is a Getaway Friday morning, January the 6th, 2023. Hey, I did get that right. 12 minutes past the hour, you are tuned in to The Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship, heard live on Friday mornings here, 9:15 a.m. until 10 a.m., and we are glad to have back after a hiatus, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So I thought I better come in here this morning and let Scott know that I hadn't gone off and died somewhere.
No. And did you have a good holiday season?
We did. The church was so busy. We did so many things. You know, through Thanksgiving, we served 62 people for Thanksgiving meals at the old KP Hall. And then for Christmas, we, of course, provided Christmas for, I don't know, I suppose it ended up close to about 27, 28 families. Then Christmas boxes for dinner, and we had one thing I was really thrilled about was we had our Christmas Eve, our Christmas Day, and our New Year's service. We had a full house every time. And you remember Christmas Eve, we had just been lifted from a snow emergency, and it was bad out. And that was at 9 o'clock at night, and we filled the church up. Excuse me. And then on Christmas Day, of course, that was Sunday morning. We had a full house as we did on New Year's Day. New Year's Day surprised me more than any. Mm-hmm. I could see where on Christmas Day people think, you know, we need to be in church if it's open. But on New Year's Day, it surprised me. We had a great crowd again. So that's thrilling. I think a lot of it comes back to the fact that we are really growing a lot. And I think that we're growing because of relationships of not and no new gimmicks at our church. No gimmicks to bring people in. We're not passing out tickets for a big TV or anything like that. But you know, I know a lot of people do that kind of stuff to try and draw people in. But no, it's just people wanting to hear. You know what I hear more than anything is I hear people saying they want to hear the Bible taught in its entirety and in truth. And that is something a lot of people are seeking today. And honestly, they're leaving a lot of the churches that are not doing that. And churches, and the sad thing is churches are thinking, well, what can we do in order to bring people back and to attract them? And they're doing all these things to attract them and bring them back when the honest truth is people just want to hear the truth of the Word of God. You know, it's really funny. In Islam is more attractive to younger people that are non-Muslim than those that are. And, excuse me, what I mean by that is, not those that are, it's more attractive to younger people that are non-Muslim than older people that are non-Muslim. And it's because younger people, whether they admit it or not, they are truly looking for something that has absolutes. They're looking for boundaries, especially when they haven't had them. They may not admit it, but they're looking for boundaries. And, you know, anyone that knows Islam at all understands that it is very, there's a lot of rules, a lot of strict rules. Kind of like, and I don't want to compare the two too much, but kind of like when you go back to our Old Testament when everything was rule-driven. And sacrifice-driven and repentance-driven in that way to living as we now is since Christ. We're living in the age of grace, and you don't have those absolutes. Well, in Islam, you still do because they never had a Savior in an age of grace. And so people are looking for that, and I think that we don't realize sometimes that the reason the churches are losing people is because they're not teaching the Bible in its entirety as the Word of God, as it's meant to be taught. And, you know, people begin to realize that, you know what, I can listen to good music anywhere. I can listen to some upbeat pep talk anywhere. I don't have to get up and go to church to do it. And if the church that looks just like a broken society, why do we need to be in the church? And I think a lot of that goes on. But I would definitely attribute the growth in our church to not being afraid to shy away from the truth of the Word of God. And I think God honors that. The Bible says that His Word is sharper than any two-edged sword, rightly dividing the Word of truth. And why do you need gimmicks when you have something that sharp? Would be my thinking. And what do you think on that, Frank? Frank's with us today. Good morning, Frank Robinson.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be back. I think in the age that we live in, you're right about the word of the Lord being like a two-edged sword. We need a lot of whetstones.
Yeah. Explain yourself, Frank.
To keep the sword sharp. You know, we need a...
I understand what you're saying.
The message is only as sharp as the time that has been put into the message. In studying, in preparation for, in trying to make it to fit your congregation, you know, the various needs or wants, various mm-hmm. Problems within a congregation, within the community. And so you have to gear your messages that way also.
Yeah, I think there has to be that. I think that it's like anything, you have to do your best at what you're called to do.
Yes.
And I think that, yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Although I do
Seriously?
Believe, I do believe that the one thing that you left out that I know you agree with, but you left it out, and I want to put it back in, is that the working of the Holy Spirit has a great a great amount of bearing on whether that message gets across or not. But there's got to be something for Him to work with.
You can't hinder the active movement. No. Of the Holy Spirit in a service.
You can't keep beating people up for money either.
No.
You know, it looks so agenda-driven when you do.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think that you just have that. I want to read a passage this morning, kind of tell you where I'm at. I'm in part of the Sermon on the Mount, and I'm in Matthew chapter 5. I'm beginning with verse 36. It says, "Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou can't make a choice, whether your hair is black or white. But let your communication be yes or no, yea or nay." As I'm reading in the King James, so it's going to be some older words. Bear with me. "But let your communication be yea, yea, or nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil." In other words, be black and white in your speaking. Let your yes be yes, your no be no. It says, "You have heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, that you resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also." And that's that attitude of forgiveness and that attitude of reconciliation. Even with someone that would hurt us, we go to battle way too quick today. Mm-hmm. We truly do. "If any man will sue you at the law, take away the coat and let him have thy cloak also." In other words, look, if you're going to go down that road with me, you know, just take what you want. I hope you're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, I think, Scott, I think people are looking for a fight. And when they don't get a fight, they don't know how to operate. And, you know, as Scripture also tells us, that a kind word turns away fighting or wrath rather than building up, you know, more hatred. Then it says, "Whoever compel thee to go a mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to him what he asks, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn thou not away. Ye have heard that it hath been said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and bless them that curse you. Be good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you." Wow, have we forgotten that one today?
Oh, absolutely. That's one area we all need to go back.
We all need to go back to. But you know, the thing is, when that attitude is implemented, the amount of animosity dies down. It doesn't say, well, if you let everyone walk all over top of you, everyone's just going to get walked over all the time. And I don't think that that's the case. I think that, you know, there are times when we have to defend ourselves, but there's times when we understand, look, I say I've got myself in this position, maybe I shouldn't have gone down this road, now I'm in this arrangement, whatever it may be, and I need to shy from it. And take your lumps. It doesn't say in there to go out and keep looking for more people to do that to you. It says when you find yourself in a situation, take your lumps and show love.
Remember when Peter asked Christ, how many times should I forgive my brother? And
mm-hmm.
Peter thought he was being generous.
Seven times seven.
And the Lord said, no, you know, 70 times seven. You know, and to pray for them, to do good to them. And I think that's an area that we miss a lot.
Yeah, that's true, because, you know, there's nothing about forgiveness that says that you have to keep looking to be hurt. And there's nothing about forgiveness that says that you have to continue down a bad road and just keep forgiving him for doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I better go out today. I got to take my lashes today so I can feel like a good person. No, that's not it at all.
No, that's not it.
It's, you know, you do forgive someone. Forgiving is a tough thing, I think, to talk to people about, because some people say, but you don't know what they did to me.
It's not natural.
It's not natural. Revenge is natural.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get, I'll get them. You know, how many times do, you know, I don't think there's too many prayers answered that are, Lord, will you please give it to them because they really got me. And that's not what he wants to see. It says, of course, it says, pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he makes the sun to rise on evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. In other words, you know, they're here. You know, they're going to be here. They're here for a reason. You know, sometimes I think God will send everyone. You know, I hear so much talk of people saying, you know, are there angels around me to protect me? Who's my guardian angel? Well, believe it or not, I think sometimes bad things are sent in your path just to stop you and send you in another direction. That maybe you're falling down in, and it's just too easy. Says, for if you love them which love you, and reward, what reward have you? Not even the publicans. Do not even the publicans do the same? What she's saying is, of course, the publicans. Everyone knew that. You know, they were using people. They were using people. They were mistreating. They were the laws were not fair. There was nothing fair. But what he's saying is, you know, that, yeah, it's easy to love someone that loves you. You know, you're my best buddy. Look what you do for me all the time. You know, you're there when I can count on you. Well, he's saying even the evil publicans, and he might as well have been saying even the evil men will love those that love them. You know, what's the old saying? There's honor among thieves? Or was it no honor among thieves? I don't know. There's certainly a camaraderie among thieves. Mm-hmm. That's for until you get backed in a corner and then they bite your head off. But the point is, even thieves have their best buddies. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear young people talk about their homeboy or their, you know, it may be someone that's just as rotten as they are, but, you know, hey, we're in it together and he's always got my back. I told a group of boys one time, I was speaking to a boys' home in South Carolina. And I was talking to some really rough young men, and I told them, you know, I get so tired of hearing you guys say, yeah, but my buddy's got my back, you know. I said, no, they don't got your back. They're going to stab you in the back.
Yeah.
And I said, here's the deal. They got your back until it's either them or you, and then you're done. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, the only one that offers total absolution and forgiveness is Jesus Christ. He'll always have your back. I said, and he's there, but I said, these guys that you're counting on, and then I asked them point blank, I said, guys, how many times can you look back and look at somebody you thought was your never going to walk away from you, always have your back, that maybe while you're sitting here right now, because they ratted you out. I said, come on, man, you can't think that way. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying, look, even the publicans can love people that love them, but then he says, be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which in heaven is perfect. Wow. In other words, love people that hurt you. Love people that treat you badly. And, you know, God has shown love to us when we don't deserve it. And that's what he's wanting us to learn. That, look, if Scott's going to, say Scott's going to do something horrible to me, and I'm just going to write him off, call him, you know, say he's rotten and you are completely written off. I want nothing to do with you. I tell everybody about it. Okay. Now, how am I to believe that God is ever going to forgive me when I've written him off, maybe cursed him, maybe did all these things against him? Why would I think he would forgive me if it's okay for me to not forgive someone else? And that's why God's saying, you want to be like me. You want to be like your Father in heaven. Look, I forgave you, and you weren't worth being forgiven at all. Look how rotten you were. Well, If I can forgive you, you can forgive that other person. Yeah. And I think that in society today, we have kind of fallen away from that a little bit. And it's so easy just to mark people and be nasty to them. And nasty's okay as long as it's in my corner. I see a lot of that in politics. You know, you point a finger at one group for being nasty when you're being just as nasty in your group. But that's okay because that's your group. You see what I mean? And we just got to quit some of this stuff. Frank read a passage this morning in Philippians 4:3.
Yeah.
4:3. Being happy. To meditate on the good. And we don't meditate on a lot of good. And because of that, we need to not just, this is going to sound kind of odd for me to say this, we don't just need to meditate on the good, we need to meditate on the possibilities. We need to be possibility thinkers. And what I mean by that is, don't dwell on the bad because it'll keep you down. But when you look at something, just like, for instance, we were talking this morning about, you want to take that, Scott?
Yeah, I'll get that. I think that's an off-the-air call. Yeah, I think it was. Okay. Telemarketer.
Great.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were talking this morning about the struggles that people are having in all the stores, in all the retail, keeping help. I was talking to a Kroger employee that told me that Kroger's having a horrible time. They can't really fire anybody because they got to keep bodies. And everybody knows that it's going to be hard to fire them, so therefore that shows in their working. And you might be able to have... Well, I don't want you to talk about your job, but you're still at Kroger, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want you to talk about your job. And it's not Scott I was talking about. But anyway, and I think that, you know, I've talked to people in other... Matter of fact, I just talked to a guy yesterday that told me they've got a great business here in Marion. And really... been a solid business. They're good people. And he said, you know, we might have to shut our doors because we cannot keep the amount of help to keep the quality product going out that we've always intended to do. He said, people won't show up for 2 or 3 days and then just walk in like it's nothing. Like, you know, hey, I'm back. And no explanation. And I said, you know, it's so odd. When I was young, if I missed work, I thought, man, I'm really in trouble. And all the way to work, I'm worrying about how my boss is going to be when I get there. I mean, we used to be really concerned about keeping our job, and now that concern is kind of gone. Okay, so I can look at that, and yes, we were talking about that. I can look at that and really badmouth young people and badmouth this and bad. But here's the deal. How about I look at it and say, well, what's some possibilities? How can we get this turned around?
Well, it's interesting you bring this up because I've had a lot of conversations with people about this, and I am not really sure. Maybe there is a lack in the workforce. I have not seen that as far as people applying for jobs at all. People are still applying at a great rate. Interviews are going on all the time. What has happened is, and a lot of people say, well, maybe they're not coming dressed properly. Maybe they aren't interviewed. That's not what's happening.
No.
What's happening is that for management and whatever business it is, whether you own your local business or you're a conglomerate and you're a management, you've always had the mindset that you're lucky to work here. And if you're lucky to work here, I can treat you. I'm not going to say they treat them badly, but they talk down to them. It's a little more, I'm over your head. The difference is now, and people used to take that because they said, well, I don't want to lose my job. Like you just said, I got to get there because I don't want to lose my job. The problem is now, no matter what your job is, you can be fired and tell McDonald's that you were fired, walk across the parking lot and get another job that's paying that or more. I believe management needs to, I'm not saying they have to let people not do their job. You're not going to pay somebody not to do their job. But when somebody's new at a job, you better change your philosophy on how you talk to them because they're not going to put up with that anymore because the truth is right now, they don't need your job. They can walk across the parking lot and get another job.
Right. And that's just because of the environment.
Right now, yeah.
And I think a lot of things have brought this. And I noticed this a lot when I was entering the job force. We went through a period of time in this country where we transitioned from, in most companies, apprenticeships over to degrees. Mm-hmm. And you had people coming out of school with degrees that had no clue what they were doing at the company or they were getting hired. And you would have these guys that had been there 20, 30 years that knew the job inside out. And the elitist attitude of, I've got a degree, shut up, you'll do what I say, really took hold. And there became a huge division between management and the workforce. And it was, it should have never happened, I don't think. I blame the upper management and owners of the companies for letting it happen. I do believe if this company is going to get anywhere and get back on its feet and stay there, there's going to have to be more of a movement back towards the trades and back towards even things that aren't the trades, back towards apprenticeships. I was talking to a financial planner a couple years ago, and he told me, he says, Steve, do you know any good, solid, hardworking young people that would be a real go-getter? And I said, oh, I'll think about that. Why? He said, because I'll be honest with you. I'm tired of trying to hire people that got their degrees and coming out of school. He said, if I could just find someone to come out of high school that was had a go-getter and a go-getter attitude, he said, I would mentor them in my job, in what I do. Of course, there's licensing involved that you'd have to study for. But he said, I would mentor them. He said, I would guarantee them the first year I would pay them $100,000 if they stuck out for a year with me. And, you know, this is someone in the financial world saying they want someone to mentor someone, not somebody to go through school. And we're seeing that trend. We're seeing a decrease in college applications, and we're seeing an increase in trades and in trade schools everywhere. But I'd say not just trade schools. We're starting to see apprenticeships be the thing that people are wanting them to do. Look, if you're going to, being the fact I've had so many failures come through the door that supposedly were qualified, I think I'm better off just finding somebody that wants to work and training them in what I know. And, you know, that's what we used to do a lot of, and I think we're going to need to do a lot more of that. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I think we're going to need to do is we have to start making personal responsibility a priority. This fellow that I talked to here in Marion the other day that was talking about, you know, I hope we can keep our doors open, he said, was telling his office staff that we got to draw a line somewhere. We got to quit putting up with, I'll come to work when I feel like it. And he said, because if we don't, because it's obviously not working with all the forgiveness and helping them, you know, do, it's a different world out there today. if you're going to hire someone, there's a good possibility you're going to have to help them get their license back. You're going to have to help them get a car. You're going to have to help them get, there's more than just, it's kind of like the kids that go to school today. There's so many kids going to school that, you know, now they provide lunch. They provide breakfast. I know in most of the schools right now, they have some spare clothes aside if kids need them. They also have the ability for students to take a shower if they need to have one, if they have not had no place to bathe. And it's kind of that way across the board. You know, even in the workplace, you're parenting and being a boss at the same time. And we have got to get back to a point where I don't want to be mean, but you and I grew up in a generation, Frank grew up in a generation, where there came a point where mom and dad said, sink or swim. Yeah. And you swam. You know, birds kick their young out of a nest for a reason. Because if they don't, they'll just sit there and take up a nest and wait on mom to keep bringing them a worm all the time. And they kick them out of the nest. And the ones that don't fly, the cat gets. And the point is, there are those that need extended help. Please, I don't want to be cruel in that way. But we have to get to that point, back to that point of personal responsibility. Not everyone, this word equity has really been stretched to its utmost boundaries, I would say, in having equity among everyone else. You know, there has to be a point where there is personal responsibility, and with everything, with our life, with our faith, there really has to be in our faith. Churches too often have become, I'm going to go in and I'm going to get my fill on Sunday. I'm going to get a positive message about what I can do. You might as well just go to a Norman Vincent Peale meeting, if people remember who he was, Power Positive Thinking. You might as well just go to those once a week, and you know, the rest of the week, just go do what you're going to do. Look, either the truth is going to take root in you or it's not. But we have to quit. I think that we really need to stop giving people excuses for their behavior and what they do. And I think schools need to get back to the ABCs. Absolutely. The ABCs, there is, because of our culture, there is going to be a certain amount of psychology and going a little beyond the normal step of a teacher. Because of what's going on at home in many cases. And it's very sad. Those that are plugged in know it and see it. And not certainly across the board. Teachers are called to be so much more than teachers these days. But even at that, our main focus has to be on educating them in what they need educated in. Not social engineering. That doesn't need to be in the schools. But then... And another thing that I've seen, I had a young man call me about a month ago. It was about a couple weeks before Christmas, and he said, "Pastor," he was a mess, and he was in class on a Marion campus. I'm not even going to tell you what school it was, but he's in class on a Marion campus, and the subject of Christianity came up. And they were bashing him and another boy in the class so hard. The whole class, including the teacher, this wasn't in a high school, this was in a secondary level, were bashing them so hard. And he was trying to explain his position. He wasn't, you know, argument. He said, "No, you don't understand. This is what we believe, and this is the truth of this or that." And it got so bad, they had to get up and leave the classroom. And I said, "Did you go down to the office and say, 'I need to talk to someone, this is what happened'?" "No." I said, "Well, that's the first thing you should have done. You shouldn't have just left campus." And I've talked to a couple other students since then that these things are going on. Look, we're a country that bring me your tired, your poor, your hungry masses, yearning to be free. You know, the point being that we're all different. And when I say bring me your masses, bring them in a proper way. You know, this isn't, you know, the problem, a lot of the problem with the border is there's a big sign up at the border says this is the country of ultimate freebies. You know what I mean? Yes, there are those that do want to work. They want to escape where they're at. But, you know, there's something about that too, Scott. You know, the reason that America has been a financially well-off place is because people set the ground rules and they work to do it. And they originally, they don't today, but they originally held our leaders accountable for what they did. And these, man, if you look at the natural resources in some of these countries, they could be booming. But the people have given in to the leadership and let the leadership just run willy-nilly. You can't tell me that there's not enough people in Mexico to overrun those drug cartels. You know what I mean? The drug cartels have money, but they don't have armies. Would it be a fight? Would there be a lot of blood loss? Would there be a lot of people that would die, probably? Yeah, but aren't there anyway? I mean, at some point, they have to be accountable for their country and what goes on. You know, I saw a picture of, and yet some of you have probably seen it, this movie theater with guys and their heads bowed and they were crying, and it was... soldiers, and it was citizens of Germany after the Holocaust, after World War II, when they were liberated, having to watch on film the atrocities that they saw in all of the prison camps and the horrible abuse and what had gone on. And these people were just, look, they needed to be accountable for what their government was doing. And they needed to be, so where's our accountability? It has to start somewhere. And I think that one place it needs to start is individually. I think that when people hire people today, they need to say, look, I'll give you a shot, but we're a company of accountability. And I'm telling you now, this isn't going to be a second and third chance company. If you can make it to this mark, I will promise you this will happen. Now, here's the other thing. When they make that promise, it better be there.
Well, see, you know, I think it, and I think a lot of companies are making promises like that, thank goodness. But I think one of the problems really is, comes back to the original topic today, which was forgiveness. And a lot of forgiveness and a lot of bad feelings come out of people's moods and their attitudes.
Sure it does.
And I have seen, you know, if you bring somebody in, you say, hey, listen, we are a big company. We've got tuition reimbursement. We've got, we're still a union. We've got paid vacation even for part-time employees. We've got discounts that kick in. You're giving people a lot of incentive to want to do that job. But if you have to come in 8 hours, 5 days a week, and deal with somebody who treats you like, you know, dirt.
Sure.
Boy, that's a hard pill to swallow, especially when you know that you, hey, it may not be better over there, but maybe different than what I'm getting here. And I've seen that happen just so often lately. And, you know, a lot of times management is even aware of it. You know, a supervisor will be in a position, and because they've been there a while and they show up every day, we'll leave them there. Yeah, we know. You know, I've even heard management say, just overlook that person.
You know what, though, Scott? Yeah. I think a lot of it...
up to a next level of failure.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of it comes back to... I was talking to... give you an example. I was talking to our extension agent, 4-H extension agent, OSU extension agent, in Delaware County. A couple of years ago, she was... I was in a child protection training class we all have to take for 4-H. And she was talking about that she had a meeting with... I don't remember. I think it was the Chamber of Commerce, maybe, in Delaware. And they were talking about how they really was asking her what 4-H programs were coming along the line that had a lot of hands-on in different things. And they said the reason was they had so much industry wanting to come to Delaware. And the problem they were having is no one they hired had any physical skills. There are no physical skills anymore. And I think that we're seeing that in a lot of businesses. We're hiring people. I think sometimes we're hiring people that are, say, 18 years old. And they graduate. They come. And I'm going to tell you, Scott, they don't know how to do anything. And it's frustrating to the boss that has worked their way up and they know how to do everything to see this person that looks at you like you're silly when you put a hammer in their hand and think, which direction do I swing this thing? You know, or and I know that's being extreme, but honestly, they ask, go get me a Phillips screwdriver, and they come back and say, I couldn't find one. None of them said Phillips on the handle. You know, that kind of stuff. But that is a reality. And I think that we're going to have to be a little more patient with these people. I love my grandson. My grandson is running a landscaping crew. He's been graduated for a little over 2 years. And he got a job. He wanted to go out and hit the workforce, and he got a job landscaping. And those kids were brought up working. They're farm kids. You know they're brought up working. And my grandson had school all day yesterday, and his younger brother, and last night he just finished power washing a hog barn at 8 o'clock that he was working on so the new pigs could come in today. These kids work. But anyway, my grandson's been working for a landscaping company. He's running the crews. He's dealing with the customers. He's doing payroll. He's doing all these things, and he's got guys there. One particular guy that I know that he mentions that really frustrates him. He could do most stuff if he really wanted to, but he has such a lack of motivation that he'll not show up and just not show up and then show up the next day like nothing. And they said, you know, it would be easier for some jobs to send a guy home with a truck at night. But they tried that, and it didn't work because he won't show up for work, and now their truck's at his house too. And so this is a lot of what we're dealing with, and I think there has to be patience mixed with accountability and mixed with some reward at the same time. And we've got to get over this elitist attitude between management and employment. I think that you can show that you're a boss and you're firm without treating them like... my brother told me when he was in the Navy in boot camp in the Great Lakes 50 years ago, 45 years ago, that you know, they're trying to break their will and get them in line to be soldiers, right? To break them down, then build them up. And all they called them in boot camp was raisins. You guys are nothing but raisins. And you know, that's the attitude many times with the companies when they hire someone. You're nothing but a raisin.
But every job I've ever worked at, including the ones I work at now, I know who I can go to who's going to get something done.
Sure.
You know, after you've been there a while, and you know there are people who you don't want to go to. How many times when we've really, honest to goodness, been sick, not feeling well, and are not going to make it into work that day, and you call, and you, oh, I don't want to get that person on the line. I hope that person picks up the phone. Because you just know. I mean, I'll give you an example. There was a job I worked at one time, and it was hilarious because both managers had the same amount of power. They were just two managers in this store. And one manager, if you called and said, I'm sick, I will not be there today, feel better, see you soon. And then they would go to either covering, they would try to cover that shift, or they, right, you know, what are we going to do? The other manager, I'm not feeling well, I'm not going to be in today, what's wrong with you? Now, that's what you don't want. Who do you think the employees want to talk to? And who do you think the employees are going to do more? Hey, would you, and then a week later, hey, somebody called off. Would you come in and cover this shift? You think you're going to come in for that person who hassled you?
Absolutely not.
But you might come in for, yeah. And I've heard people say of that other person.
Poor management.
Yeah, and that's it. And that's it.
But you know, Scott, I worked a job one time where I was managing a restoration, cement restoration company back when I was very, very much younger. And I didn't miss a day in 6 years. And it was because of the responsibility that I had, and I knew that I didn't want anything to fall behind. Now, I never got sick enough that I had to stay. I got sick enough that I probably should have stayed home, but I never got so sick that I literally couldn't be there. Of course, when you're young, that you can go through those stretches a lot easier. But the truth is that I think that a lot of absences are unintended. What I mean, not unintended, they're not justified. There's a lot of people, I just don't feel it today. Or, you know, I used to have a cement crew work under me when I was managing, and it never failed. The night before a huge pour of concrete, these guys, for some reason, would tie one on. Now, they knew they were in trouble if they weren't at work. I'd fire them. You'd not show up on a pour day. You're in trouble. You know, by usually about 2 hours into the work, and after they'd hung on the fence and puked three times and sweat all that alcohol out of them, they were back in the swing of things, but they still came to work. Today, those same people would have no thought of it. They just wouldn't come into work. And part of it is because they don't care anything about their employer. And because it's come the other way, where the employer hasn't really cared about them either. But caring about you, part of caring about you is holding you accountable. It's just like a true parent that really loves a child will discipline you. The Bible said God disciplines those he loves. You know, you're disciplined, and the reason you're disciplined is because they want you to be better, and they want to see that character built. Well, it's the same thing in a workforce. A good boss is going to discipline you, and you need to recognize that and know that he's got your back when it comes down to it. But you're going to have to build up and be a better person. You're not going to get raises when you continually don't come in. I did work for a company, and I got firsthand thing of this with the management. It's been several years ago. It was after I was a pastor. I started out being bivocational, and I had taken a job for the winter months at a very large manufacturing place down by Delaware on the line. Never done this in my life. I'm an outdoor person. I'm not a line person, but I picked up on it really quick and was pretty darn good at it, and hated it, but I needed it, and I was there. And we went into these meetings, and they sit down and tell us, we're going to do this for you, we're going to do this for you, we're going to do this for you. And every one of them had a catch to them. And what I soon found out with that company was the catches that were in there were almost impossible to meet. Almost impossible to meet. They had a great advancement program after 6 months. But in that six-month period, you could not clock in late one time. It's dead of winter. You hear what I mean? It's dead of winter. Now, there's a real good possibility that with roads and whatnot, and there was no excuse for it. It didn't matter if you were sick, a doctor. If you clocked in late within 6 months, you had to start over the next 6 months, and you're not going to meet that, and I knew you weren't going to meet it. And then I went into, they were trying to get all the employees to buy into these 401ks. Well, we went into a meeting, and they're talking about if you do this, you do this, you do this. The more employees you have, the better your rate's going to be, all these kind of involved. And I asked the manager in a meeting that day, I said, are you going to buy into it? He said, I already have, and I and all of our management's buying into it. And I thought to myself, you're wanting all these grunt-level employees to buy into this so that you guys get a better rate. And the truth of the matter is, you're not paying these guys enough money to feed their kids. How are they going to take money out to put in a 401k? And you know, and if you're a smart person, you pick up on this stuff, that everything was geared toward the management. With that company, my last straw with them was I was working very hard. I was beyond meeting my number quota. They really wanted me there. And then they told me one day that I had never noticed it. There was a video camera on my station and everyone else's station. And the boss could sit at home and kick back drinking a beer with his buddies and hit his TV and watch me work. And I pictured in my mind this guy sitting back laughing at this grunt down there working their tail off so I could sit here with my buds at night and laugh at them. And that was it. I said, I can't walk. If you can't trust me enough to know that I'm doing good work. You've got a manager on the floor walking back and forth the stations. If you got to put a video camera on me all day, I don't need this, and I left. And I think that's we've taken the personal care out of so much of management and out of companies, the relationship. You know, there were times when people bought their bosses a present for Christmas because they liked their boss. How many bosses get presents from employees today?
Well, you know, with about 8 minutes left to go here, the forgiveness issue is something that I think is very important, because last week we had an interesting issue around here, and I think it does fall under the category of forgiveness. We had Bill Cosby on last week on the station. He did a live interview. He wanted to do it. He came to us. It really was no seeking him out. He was on the phone.
Okay.
Now, we did not advertise this prior to the interview because, to be honest with you, 30 minutes before it happened, I still wasn't even sure it was going to happen. He came on, he did 22 minutes. It was the first time he'd spoken in more than a year or something like that. And when the interview was over, I opened up the phone lines, and what do you think of this? What do you think of what Bill Cosby had to say? And a lot of people felt that he should not have been let on, but a lot of people felt that they wanted to hear what he had to say, about 50-50. That's okay. So the show's over that day, and I go home, and sometime in the afternoon, somebody posts something on my social media that this story has been picked up nationally. Now, by the time it was over, 48 hours later, it had been in Variety, Fox News, ET Canada, United Kingdom, every newspaper, radio.
Never got a dime from that.
Never got a dime from any of it, but it ran. Now, so interestingly enough, the next day we come back and say, "Wow, did people see what happened with the Bill Cosby story?" And people would still say, "You shouldn't have had him on." Now, what's interesting to me, because this all comes back to what Bill Cosby has have alleged to have done. Now, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I'm not going to sit in judgment of him, which is coming back to the forgiveness thing. But what occurred to me was, the first time I asked the question of what do you think of what Bill Cosby had to say, it was clearly a local story.
Yeah.
And people at that point could say, well, nobody cares about Bill Cosby. We don't want to hear it.
Well, they do.
Obviously they do all around the country.
But you know, I'll tell you something, Scott. I think in that situation, I think there's as many people wanting to hear the goods, but there's as many people wanting to have some kind of closure on this, that he's not as bad as he's being put out to be. Bill Cosby was such a loved person and had such high standards for where he wanted the black community to come and be. For him to then get knocked off and be doing these things, was the hypocrisy really hurt people in their heart.
Right.
And I think a lot of people want to forgive him, but they want to hear a reason to do it.
Right, and I think that's what it is. I think that it is, I mean, how is that not a story for what you just described? This guy who was one of the most clear cut.
He loved him.
Oh, for over 70 years. And then all of a sudden he's accused of these horrible, heinous crimes, put in prison for almost 3 years. I mean, my goodness. I think people look at that as Jekyll and Hyde, and they think this is the most bizarre thing I can't think of any more bizarre case of anything that's ever happened.
No, and I still, I'm one of those people that want to see an explanation. I'm sorry, I don't want to, you know, I just can't. I always want to see the best come out in people. You know, I truly do. I wish that all the politicians that just really bother me and where they stand, and quite frankly, we had a lot of evil in Washington. I mean, downright dishonest evil. You know, I want to see those people turn around and see the truth and walk away from that. You know, we have so much hope in this world. You know, God offers us such a free gift of redemption, and you know, and to feel good about ourselves and to go out there and do the right thing and to love your brother and love other people. And let me say this, because I know we're about off the air. And I didn't mean to butt in and interrupt.
No, about 3 minutes.
I think you had said the most of
it. Yeah, I got it out.
I think the people that want to hear the dirt and that want to see the worst and to really see Bill Cosby buried have a heart problem. You understand what I mean? They got a problem themselves they need to take care of. Because if we can't look at people and want to see something better and hope that it's not true and hope that there's a better person than that, then we have an issue. We have no love in our heart. You understand what I mean?
No, of course. That's what we spoke
that,
about.
That's what we desire. Now, I do want to see justice for those that are truly doing evil. And I do want to see an example made that, look, you don't do this and do that. You know, don't be a politician that we have trusted you, you know, with what you said on a campaign trail and do something off the opposite. The best way to take care of that is vote them out and don't let them back in. You know, if you're not going to, look, be honest about what you're going to do. You're going to have followers or you're not. If you got enough followers, you're going to get elected, but do what you say you're going to do. And then your constituents are fine. And if you're not going to do it and you're just going to be a lie, go do something else. Go sell used cars. They love you. But, but you know, the truth is, we need to show love and compassion in our heart for other people, and not necessarily, people say it's easy for you to do that, you're a pastor, you have to do it all the time. No, I'm a person. I'm a person, and we all are. And I think that we can care about people and understand that we're not so special ourselves and that we're perfect. And sometimes I think that we want to tear people down just because we do feel bad about ourselves, and you want to put them a little bit below yourself to bolster yourself up a little. I'll let you have the last word.
Well, yeah, and I think that's it. I think, you know, I think sometimes it's not taking the bait. You know, one thing that ran through my mind here with about 60 seconds left when you first started talking about forgiveness was, you know, there are a lot of times I'll be in conversations with people who I do consider to be friends, and I'll notice that they're disagreeing with me pretty, you know, adamantly about silly stuff, nothing important at all. And when I'm aware of that, I'll start to say things that even I don't agree with just to see if they'd still disagree, and they'll continue to disagree. And I think, are you trying to cause
disagree?
Yeah, are you trying to like get a rise? I don't know. See that happening sometimes, and I don't know why I think because they're unhappy.
Probably.
It's unfortunate.
Hey, this is Pastor Steve Whitaker. I'm here with Scott Spears and Frank Robinson. We are at 209 East Water Street. Community Christian Fellowship is. Our number is 740-494-2222. Love to see you on Sunday morning at 10:30.
Absolutely. And don't forget to check out the website, wwgh1071.com. Archived episodes dating back to 2018 are there, so don't miss that. You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For legendary comedian and the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll. And as I teased before we went to the break there, we have on today a lady who I've had on the program, I believe, two times before. But every time she